Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff One Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio.
And for this Feminist Movie Friday, once again, Annie is letting me, well, letting my teenage self live in the wonderful memories of some of my favorite movies. So excited. And much like my love for Brandy and Whitney Houston's Cinderella, these movies made my heart soar, and it still does. I rewatched it, and I was like, it's so bad, but it's so good. Yes, it's so bad, it's so good. So we're going to jump into it. And today, we are talking about the amazing performances by Oscar winner Whoopi Goldberg in the smash hits, I say both of them, Sister Act and Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit. You get it, Annie? Do you
yes,
get it?
And we've used this pun before in one of our titles about women and their habits.
There we go. I love it. And yes, even though the second one scored like, I think, 19% in Rotten Tomatoes at this point, how dare they besmirch such an amazing movie with icons like Lauryn Hill and Jennifer Love Hewitt being a part of it. How dare you?
But
I digress. And as per usual, we come on the heels of the anniversary of these films, the 30th anniversary, that is. So the first one was made in 1992, and the second one was made in 1993. So yes, every time we do this, I don't know how we get it done, but we do. So I like to think that we are more relevant than we know.
That's a nice thought.
But also, there is a third one in the works, and this is all done with Disney. If you want to watch it, you can go watch it on Disney+. It began with Disney. I didn't realize that. I thought it was Touchstone. But it actually was a Disney film to begin with. And yeah, there's a third one coming soon, actually. I think Tyler Perry has signed on to be a producer. Whoopi Goldberg is very excited. Apparently, Harvey Keitel was like, I wanted to be in the second one. Put me in the third one. So he apparently really loved this movie. The gangster dude really loved this movie. So we'll see what happens.
Yes.
It is also on Broadway. It was, anyways, and was made into a musical, as it should be. I feel like that's only natural.
Right.
But yeah, so let's get into it.
Yes, let's. So Sister Act was released in 1992, and though it ran into several barriers, including going through several writers, it was a success, as in fact, it hit the eighth highest grossing film worldwide that year, and it sat in the number two spot for four straight weeks behind Lethal Weapon 3, Patriot Games, and Batman Returns.
That's right.
Which, yes, was one of our other feminist Movie Friday double features. I think that one was actually technically a triple feature, but yeah, that was a fun one.
Oh, yeah,
because I threw in Spider-Verse at the end.
That's right. Annie's Annie, you always got to add the extra.
We might be talking about Spider-Verse at the end of this one. Who knows? Anytime I can take it. And with its $31 million budget, it grossed $231 million worldwide, which was, yeah, not so bad for a comedy film that was led by a mostly women cast. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're excited to talk about it. I did love this movie when I was a kid. I think I was a little bit young for it.
You are.
I was a little young, but I did love it. As we said, the movie starred Oscar winner Whoopi Goldberg playing Dolores Van Cartier, who had just won that award for her role in Ghost. Which, have I told you my story about Ghost?
No.
I've never seen it, but randomly one day, the DVD just showed up outside of my door.
Oh.
And I haven't watched it yet, but
I
own
it. As an adult?
Yes, like within like the past, it was before the pandemic, but maybe the year before the pandemic.
Someone really wants to do the pottery scene with you.
I think it was a ghost, obviously. Also starring in this film was Dame Maggie Smith playing the Reverend Mother, Kathy Najimy as the Sunshine Sister Mary Patrick, Wendy McKenna as Shy Sister Mary Robert, Harvey Keitel as the gangster boyfriend Vince LaRocca, and Bill Nunn as Lieutenant Eddie Souther. The original script and screenplay was completed by Paul Rudnick, but due to some disagreement with the studio and studio execs, he backed off and other writers stepped in, including beloved Carrie Fisher and Nancy Myers of 90s rom-com fame.
Right. So that's a lot. And apparently, like, they had Bette Midler as the original star, but she thought that her audience wouldn't like her as a nun. And Whoopi Goldberg stepped in, which was kind of controversial at the time because a Black woman being a lead like this for a big comedy was unheard of, especially that it kind of crossed over into worldwide fame. Also, there was a complication in that there was a debate whether or not the lieutenant should have been Black or white. Well, race being a huge issue,
right.
Finally settled in having Bill Nunn, who had come off of several other big films, finally being cast. And for some reason, the romance part between the two of them, even though you see a little chemistry, is really played down. So, you know, mm-hmm. Who knows how that went down. But okay. Mm-hmm. So, Annie, I'm going to just go into this because I'm going to get really excited. You know this.
Yes.
Because I love these movies so much. I'm just going to go whirlwind through for you listeners as well as for Annie. So, we first meet Dolores as a child at Catholic school, acting out and making jokes, being admonished by the nun for her silliness. But then we jump to present day, 1992. I know that's not present day. Don't start with me. We see Dolores performing with her girl group, a montage of different 60s, 50s, 70s classics for gamblers barely paying attention at the Las Vegas casino. We soon find out that she's having an affair with a married gangster, Vince LaRocca, who she is not happy with. And after receiving a purple mink coat that was formerly LaRocca's wife, Dolores goes to confront him and break up with him. But as she walks in, she witnesses him and his boys murdering his driver for snitching. Oh, no. So she quickly leaves, but is being chased by her boyfriend and his men. And she rushes to the police station to report what has happened, which brings us to this hilarious hijinks of her time with the nuns. Which, yeah, this is very, very dark, by the way, very, very dark beginning. You're like, oh God, someone immediately gets murdered. Okay. And I saw this at 12. Like, I love this movie. Wow. But anyway, So she is soon placed in protective custody. It is hidden with nuns at the St. Catherine's Catholic Church. And due to the nature of the case, Lieutenant Eddie Souther is the only one who knows of the location. And to say the least, Dolores is unhappy with the arrangement, but gives in. So she dons her habit and meets the other women of the convent. Here we meet Sister Mary Robert, Sister Mary Patrick, and several others, including the Reverend Mother, who is not thrilled because Dolores tells of all these things that she had done previously, trying to pretend like she was a nun in Las Vegas with all the sinners. But of course, whatever. And now we know Dolores as Sister Mary Clarence. And at this point, while she's telling these stories and complaining about the food, the Reverend Mother suggests that maybe she needs to fast and stop talking. All those things. Kind of cool. So the next day, Sister Clarence is woken up bright and early, to attend church. There we see the sad choir of the ladies with an almost empty church. And though she tries to fit in, Sister Mary Clarence decides to go to a local biker bar because, you know, she needs to get out. who was followed by Sister Mary Patrick and Sister Mary Robert, both thinking she's going out to preach to the community, so they want to join. They all rush back home after listening to some delightful music and dancing, but are caught by the Reverend Mother once again. And the following day, the Reverend Mother puts Sister Clarence in the choir because she's like, you need something new. Here you go. Do this. Sister Clarence quickly assesses the situation and the talents of the different women. We discover that the church mouse can sing very loudly, that they can harmonize, and maybe Sister Patrick is a little too loud, just a little too loud. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. And by the way, that's how she auditioned for that role, is by doing that operatic voice, and they loved it so much. They're like, don't do anything else. And so soon we come to the following church service, where we see a whole different type of choir. Sister Mary Clarence has shaken the choir up a bit, and it brings in some new church attendees. Oh, but the Reverend Mother is not happy. However, the Monsignor is delighted and encourages Sister Mary Clarence to continue to work with the choir and even to go out into the community to minister to the neighbors. And of course, this gets them a lot of attention, including a news report on how the nuns are out in the streets, connecting with the community, which is, of course, is a no-no, and the lieutenant has to be like, don't do that anymore. You can't be out like that. Why? Mm-hmm. And as everything seems to be going okay, we see that there is a leak in the precinct, and they have discovered, they being the gangsters, that where Dolores is, and reports it to Vince, who's been on the hunt for her the entire time with a big hit out on her. And though the lieutenant comes to warn Dolores because he figures it out, she tries to go back to save the nuns from Vince because they're coming, and only to be caught and taken back to the casinos, where he commands his men to shoot her. But they can't because she's dressed like a nun. They're like, but she's a nun. You can't kill a nun. Right. Maybe she really converted. And because of that, she's able to get away. And at the same time, the nuns, the actual nuns, have come to save her. And as they catch up, and they try to, you know, trick them, but no, the gangsters find them and catch up with the nuns and Dolores. And Vince and his boys are debating who's going to shoot whom because, again, nuns. But amidst all that, they get caught and arrested, and everybody lives happily ever after at the end.
Also, the Pope shows up, I should just mention.
Oh, yeah, because they have the big show at the end.
Yeah, that was my biggest.
So
I can't believe I forgot the Pope showed up.
Again, I apparently forgot again, even though I watched it again. I was like, oh, yeah, you don't see the Pope, you just see the back.
Yeah, you just see the back.
But because they'd gotten so much attention, he shows up. And, of course, they do the final performance.
Oh,
and, yes, the nuns discover her true identity, but everybody loves her nonetheless.
Yes, more on that to come.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
We we need to talk about the amazing sequel. Very predictable and hokey, but I know it's one of your faves.
I still love it so much.
This is one of my first. It's my first time seeing it. I loved it too. It was fun. Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit.
Absolutely. So, and we have once again the incomparable Whoopi Goldberg, Dame Maggie Smith, Kathy and Jimmy, Wendy McKenna, and a majority of the previous nuns, joined this time by the amazing talents of Lauryn Hill in her breakout role as Rita Louise Watson. And yes, you do hear her full name. Oh, I forgot to mention, did you notice that Bobby from Supernatural was in the first one? He was one of the cops.
No.
A young Jim Beaver is in it, just so you know. But back to the second one, okay. My bad. I just needed that. You needed that. Okay. So yes, we have Emmy Award winner Cheryl Lee Ralph as the mother of Florence Wilson, Rita's mother. Ryan Toby as Wesley Glenn Amal James, who, by the way, wrote Miami for Will Smith. So he's a songwriter.
Oh,
there's
wow.
There's a piece of trivia for you. Uh-huh. And of course, there's more fathers and priests in this one. I think they call them friars in this one, which I was like, huh, interesting. Mm-hmm. And we add that to the mix. And a Mr. Crisp, who is the antagonist, played by James Coburn. Oh, and of course, we can't forget Jennifer Love Hewitt, who is a part of this one. Very mm-hmm. slight part, but she's still there with all her makeup and glory.
Yeah, I think I got to the end and I saw her name show up and I was like, I knew it. Like the whole time it was kind of at the back of my brain, like, I know her from somewhere. Where
there
is
you go.
It?
There yes. you go.
There we go. So let's get into it. So the second one starts and we discover that Dolores is thriving as a headliner in a new Las Vegas show, which highlights her adventures from the first Sister Act. It kind of reminds me of what happens in Chicago where at the end they have their like whole musical number about
yes.
what just happened in the movie. Sort of like that. During the performance, her old friends, Sister Mary Patrick and Sister Mary Robert, come to not just watch the amazing performance, but to solicit her help. The sisters had been sent by the Reverend Mother to help revive the school that the teachers have started teaching at in San Francisco. And so begins the new adventure of Sister Mary Clarence.
Yes. So back in the habit. I said it. Sister Mary Clarence arrives at St. Francis Academy, a school that has not been doing well. As in fact, the school was on the verge of being shut down to the dismay of the sisters, but to the delight of the administrator, Mr. Crisp, who is seeking an early retirement. And it's during this time Sister Clarence is assigned to the music class, which is labeled the bird class as students, quote, fly right through it. And the rambunctious crew does not disappoint with a wonderful rendition of Yo Mama jokes and introduction to the class, including the wonderful Rita Louise Watson.
Right. And Sister Mary Clarence's relationship with the class does have a rough start. But she soon gets them together by laying down the law. And though some protest, a.k.a. some Rita, mostly, the class comes together, and we soon discover the class is full of talented singers and rappers and piano players, some of them, yeah. And here, Sister Mary Clarence decides, well, we can make a choir. We can make this a choir. And that she does with the first performance, Oh Happy Day, with an amazing solo from Wesley/Amal. Soon we discover that school was once a reputable school that won singing competitions like every year. And of course, that means this new choir would be joining this year competing and might even help save the school.
A very popular trope in the 90s,
yes,
apparently.
It is.
And it's here we see the return of Rita after Sister Mary Roberts has discovered her talent for singing. It was a beautiful, beautiful song, by the way. Sister Clarence talks Rita to come back and join the competition, but Rita has to hide her love of singing from her mother, as the mother disapproves of the dreams of being a singer because her father kind of wasted away and never fulfilling that dream. So she's like, get it together, essentially really stern. Mm-hmm. But the secret doesn't stay a secret. After her mother discovers that she's a part of the choir, Florence, the mother, makes Rita quit to focus on her studies, and even a visit from Sister Clarence does nothing to change her mind. But Rita's friend reminds her of the importance of the competition and being one of the group. And after being kind of sneaky, she joins after they do a huge fundraiser for this trip because, you know, they all had to raise the money and we'd have a great sequence of Whoopi Goldberg pretending to be James Brown. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And they all go to the competition together.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Including Rita, yeah. And at the competition, we see the many stumbling blocks in front of the kids and the school, the disapproving mother, the discovery of Sister Mary Clarence's real identity by Mr. Crisp, and other groups who seem so put together. Like, they hear another group sing the same song they're going to sing. Mm-hmm. But of course, they overcome with an updated rendition of Joyful, Joyful, led by Rita. They win the competition and the approval to keep the school open. Hurrah. Rita also gets approval from her stern mother, who's like, wow, I didn't know you were that good. And of course, we couldn't end the movie without the big reveal that Sister Mary Clarence was not a sister, but a headliner of a Las Vegas show. And she's like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they call her a showgirl. And she's like, I have never been a showgirl. I am a headliner. You know,
exactly.
You got to have that moment.
Yes.
Of course, we do have to mention the fact that they were all in these fancy robes, but they were so mm-hmm. uncomfortable. They wore their street clothes. I'm putting quotes here. Mm-hmm. Street clothes so they can be real hip hop stars. Y'all, it's very cheesy. It is very cheesy. There's a lot of lacking. I wish for more singing. But I still love it. I still love everything about it. I remember singing these songs, quoting these quotes, like, so good.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very uplifting, fun story. Because I remember, because this was the first time I'd seen the second one. And I, like, was all twisted up, like, what if they don't win? Like, they built it up, but it was just nice. It was just nice that they won. It was nice that the school stayed open.
Of course. And I love that when they were announcing the winner, the announcer was like so excited for them, like a little over the top acting. It's like, of course, St. Francis.
And
like,
yeah.
It's like, you're supposed to be biased here. What's happening, dude?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I did find it interesting that you had the split between the school that usually won, the one that sang the same song, was all white.
Right.
And very put together, as in, like, they were a posh, probably very rich school versus this school, mm-hmm. which was apparently the only one in that district. And the kids would have to have been pushed to other districts and would have been separated and may not mm-hmm. even be able to go to those schools because of not being able to get there. So a lot of things that happened. But, like, of course, it was an interesting, like, opposite of each other. We love the underdogs. We love an underdog.
Yeah.
The 90s were all about the underdog. And of course, I think things have flipped on its head more recently where they don't oftentimes win anymore, but they get a good lesson instead. I don't like that.
Well, that's why it was nice. It was one of those things where I was just like, oh, yay.
I also loved about the second one, there was no romance. There was no, like, coupling. It was just literally a coming of age story mm-hmm. about dreams. Speaking mm-hmm. of which, we'll get into some of the themes. I don't know. Of course, all movies have themes. I don't know if this one has a lot of themes. This is not so much feminist as much as in, like, really new and different in its perspective on how they did comedy mm-hmm. and who led these comedies and why it was so significant. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me. Because when this happened and Whoopi Goldberg took the role over Bette Midler, I didn't see a lot of articles where people were upset that mm-hmm. a black actress had taken over for a white actress, which I think too often happens today when it doesn't even make sense. Even if you have no investment in these characters, people automatically have this conversation about what's woke, what's correct, what's not correct, instead of just letting it be, mm-hmm. which was kind of that conversation we had about Brandy. There was a lot of controversy with Cinderella because the idea of Cinderella, a very fictional character, was of one race, which is that it was superior of a race, which is a whole different conversation. But in this role, it was not that way. There was a conversation about not seeing many black women being nuns.
Right.
And whether or not that's a thing. Mm-hmm. Very minute conversation. I will say there were a couple of lawsuits here. I don't know if you know this.
No.
One, there was a black nun, I think, named DeLuise, or so, like, was similar to Dolores.
Right.
Who had written a book in the 80s, 70s that was similar to this, how she got together the choir, revamped the city, all these things. And that she really, and she tried to make it into a screenplay. No one took it, but she felt like that Disney and these screenwriters had taken their idea, mm-hmm. which was kind of similar. So they're like, maybe? She lost that lawsuit because she tried for $1 billion and that movie did not make $1 billion. But so that kind of went to the wayside. There was another one with some fairly famous writers who said that they had that idea in the early 80s of a closeted nun, so like a fake nun, coming out and being a comedy. But they also lost, even though Disney was willing to settle for $1 million, yeah. they were trying to sue for multi-million dollars. They lost completely because they said there was not enough of the similarities. But a lot of the similarities were that it was a black nun. And so mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting in itself, that that's such a novel idea that it became something that was like about copyright and infringement and all of that. Mm-hmm. I love that today we still talk about it as just wholesome entertainment, even though, again, we talked about the gangster and then affair right. thing that happened. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
But the fact that it happened, like she moved on to the nunnery, mm-hmm. the convent, made it more wholesome. Mm-hmm. Perhaps, and I think the only curse word I remember hearing is hell and damn the entire time.
Yeah. I really liked about it that, which is not what I was anticipating, because again, I saw this movie and I really liked it when I was a kid, but I was young, so I didn't remember a lot of it. But I really liked that, you know, they're kind of like painting Dolores as, you know, the antithesis of a nun. Like, oh,
yeah.
She smokes, she drinks, she curses. She's like lived a life, as they say. But in the end, like they don't really judge her for that. And they also don't like throw her out when they realize she's not Sister Mary Clarence. Right. They're like, no, she's been somebody who's been there for us and who has helped us. And we're going to go and be there for her and help her.
Yes.
I liked that a lot because I was expecting a lot more like, oh, you lied.
You know, the ending with the kids, too. Like, you deceived us. They just right. found that her more impressive. Even said, right. you don't act like a nun. I was like, wait, what? Okay.
Right.
Anyway, so let's get into some of these themes. Of course, as you're mentioning about them rallying together, sisterhood. I feel like the literal mm-hmm. sisters yeah, right. being sisterhood. But the camaraderie, the love they have for each other, the fondness, and yeah, the encouragement they have for each other, instead of judging, they automatically are like, oh my God, that's amazing. Let's do this together. I want to help you. Or this is even better. Like, it's such a beautiful thing to see. And you can even see that, not necessarily sisterhood, but togetherness in the kids, that mm-hmm. they come together and rally together, and they really feel like something is important, and they fight for it. And it's beautiful to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked that too. One of my favorite parts of both of them was I feel like Whoopi Goldberg's character was such a good teacher. She was such a good, like, she could pick out, like, oh, you could really sing, mm-hmm. This shy sister. Like, oh, you can do this. Or, you know, you need to be a little bit more quiet, but does it in a way that's very supportive and, like, not insulting. And then with the kids, like, there's never a piece of her, even though she's confident in her, like, I'm a headliner, there's never a piece of her that's, like, putting down someone else for being better than her or anything. It's much more about, like, building up to make the best choir, this group effort that she can make. And I really like that, like, in the second one, it kind of starts where she's very successful, but it doesn't take much for them to convince her, like, hey, will you come help us out with these kids? Like, this is their right. only school. She's like, right. okay.
Immediately, she just thinks that the Reverend Mother is in trouble, and she drops mm-hmm. everything. Even the publicist, who, by the way, is an actor from Designing Women. And so he was pretty big back then. Yeah, he mm-hmm. was. She's like, no, these are my friends. No, I'll do what they ask. I mm-hmm. love that. But, you know, apparently she was like that in real life as well. So the first sister act, she had gotten the flu, had to take off a couple of days. But it was at that time she had realized that the rest of the cast, the nuns who weren't scripted, who weren't stars, who may not have speaking parts, were possibly paying for their own meals, paying for their own hotels, and she was not allowing that. So she took that time as to not necessarily protest, she said, but put things in line to make sure that their needs are being met and they're being taken care of. And so apparently, like, she did that for the cast. Kathy Najimy had actually said that she was one of the most wonderful people that she had ever worked with, that she really cared about the rest of the people on the set. And Kathy DeJimmy had worked with, and if I am correct, one of the either producers or directors or writers was also from Hocus Pocus. So she really talked about how this was a catalyst for her career, which is hilarious because she would have met, I don't know if she already knew Bette Midler,
right,
who was supposed to be on this film, so you know the connections here. Mm-hmm. But it's lovely to read that that's what happened, even though if you read into it, there was a lot of controversy, a lot of back and forth, and a lot of not niceness that happened behind the scenes. Not necessarily, again, with the actors, but even just the whole process. But yeah, that she stood up for her sisters, literally, in making sure that they are cared for. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. And like you were talking about, too, something that I love to see is that they grow together. Like, they learn from each other, as where yes. Whoopi Goldberg is, Sister Clarence is teaching them how to sing and to be confident and to really come together as a group. So do those kids. She brings them together, even if they don't like the same thing. And I love the same part of the young woman who doesn't know Mary had a little lamb. Mm-hmm. So she sings show tunes, which we have a coworker who loves show tunes. Loves show tunes.
Yes. No, I love that too. Again, that's like such a good example of her being a good teacher, because she was like, no, we're not going to make fun of her. She doesn't know it. What do you know? Like, we can come from where you are and get this worked out. So I loved that too. And I loved like her relationship with the Reverend Mother, which was very kind of, you know, clashy. Here's the antagonist in the first one. But the Reverend Mother, you know, came around and was like, look, I can appreciate what you've done. I can see what you've done for this group and for this church. And then in the second one, it is that they're good friends and protective of each other. So that was very sweet to see. But yeah, it was, I don't know. It was very nice to see a character that was so, like, willing to be open. Like, when she enters that class with the students, I would have, like, melted into a puddle and just like, oh, God. But she tried. Like, she keeps, you know, talking about her favorite music and trying to figure out what they like and how she can get them to work together. And the same with the sisters at the convents. But just kind of being an open listener and open about how difficult things are. I remember she has that line where she says something like, you know, the one thing I hate about this room is there's nothing to throw, when she's so frustrated. So it was nice to see a character like that was so invested in other people growing together, coming together, while also being like growing herself and getting to show off her own talent.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
And I have to say, I forgot to add this part. Sister Mary Lazarus was actually played by an iconic actress, Mary Wicks, who was in movies like White Christmas that starred Bing Crosby as well, like one of the biggest iconic Christmas movies. Problematic, but, you know, it's still there. She was also in one of my favorite movies, The Music Man, which I loved as well. So, like, she was a big part of that. But she is the original lead for the choir who steps down. And instead of getting mad, which oftentimes happens, she supports her and is like, oh, great job. And she's also the one that does the show tunes, the second one, as we talked about the show tunes. But I kind of forget that these actors are iconic in themselves. And even though we may not know their names, she has been in acting since 1942, if not earlier. So she's been around for a long time. And her face is very familiar. You should probably, you'll see her and you'll be like, I've seen her in something. Right. Just movies. And yeah, I think another part of the growing together, getting news, believing in themselves, of course, that's the huge part of the 90s. Really, like, understanding who you are, following your dreams, all of these things. The first one is believing in yourself. We have Mary Roberts, who doesn't sing loudly because she's so shy and embarrassed. Mm-hmm. You know, she helps her come out of herself. She does the same for Mary Patrick. She does the same for even Sister Alma. Turns off her battery, but then she gives her a chance to play away on that piano, and she really gets into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was nice to see, because I feel like when the first one starts, you know, the church is empty, and you hear kind of several versions of, you know, I joined to help people, and we're just kind of sitting here and following rules. And then, yeah, Dolores comes in and is like, no, here, we can revitalize this choir. I know that you have this strong voice. I know that you can do this, and I know that you can do this and all this stuff. But then that does lead to them going out and, like, getting to know the community and bringing other people in. And seeing that confidence grow. And then the second one with the kids, because the kids were kind of like, well, this is a bird class, as you said, like, this is, there's no point to this. And she, Dolores kind of shows them, like, oh no, there, you have talents. What you choose to do with it is up to you, but you have talent and you should believe that you have talent. She does that with Amal especially, and Rita especially.
Yeah.
Like, you can do this and it's beautiful and wonderful and, like, this gift. Yeah. And it's good. It's beautiful and wonderful to hear as the audience.
Yes. Amal, that mm-hmm. note that hits, you're like, what?
Yes.
Love that scene. And of course, everything can be fixed with singing. Everything can be fixed with singing, Annie. Yep. Did you know this? I will not lie. I love musicals. And when I was explaining to a good friend of mine why I love it, I just was like, man, I just wish a problem could be fixed with a song.
Yeah.
And then you just move on.
Yeah. And people join in.
Yes. And people don't judge you.
No. No. It is nice. I've told you that musicals make me nervous, but musicals like this don't, because I can anticipate when the singing is
right.
Coming. If it's surprise singing, then I'm
the nervous. Constant over-the-top singing where everything is a song, which mm-hmm. I love.
Right.
I love it. As in fact, went to karaoke this weekend, and mm-hmm. I did, my friend and I, because we loved it, did a rendition of On My Own from Les Mis, because I love it.
Nice.
Did we kill it? Yes. Did we sound good? No. She did. Actually, she sounded really good.
You have
I was
a good
screaming into the
voice.
Mic. But yeah, I just love all of that. And honestly, though, that's one of her things for Whoopi Goldberg. And I think it's for a lot of people. It's one of those commonalities that people really can bond over is music and songs and your interest. And she talks about that. She talks about her love for old school Motown music and the girl groups and how she found them dynamic and how that really, really affects her heart. I feel the same way. Right now, I'm really caught up in K-pop music, a lot of it, trying to figure it out. And it feels very familiar. And so it's comforting to that, mm-hmm. even though I have no idea what's happening.
Right. No, music is very cathartic. Like, you find a good song and it can just give you such emotions, such feelings. And it was, I mean, like, you know, as hokey as it might be, at the end of the second one, all these kids are coming together. They're singing this song, and it's so good, and people are so into it. You're just like, yes.
Yeah,
feeling it.
It's true. It's true. We mm-hmm. all are. I think onto all of that, one of the biggest complaints about the second one, and people are like, you know, they didn't do this right, was literally that there wasn't enough singing, that they cut off at the wrong times. So when we have you walking in to see Lauryn Hill's character and her friend singing, I sing because I'm happy, together, and then you only hear a snippet and you're like, no, why didn't you at least let them finish?
Right.
Let me hear that. And then that the only other song is Joyful, Joyful and Oh Happy Day. You want more. Although mm-hmm. this is realistic, y'all. When you're trying to rehearse for a song, it takes a whole semester, especially if you're trying to do competition, to get it perfect.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought they were, when they heard the other, like, more quote polished group play the same song, I thought they were going to switch it to, was it Oh Happy Day? They sang in the beginning. I thought they were going to switch it. I like what they did. It was good. But yeah, I was also like, I love these singing parts.
Yeah. I will say my one complaint is the dude, the white dude trying to rap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It made me cringe a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. For sure.
No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I love that they came together. I love that they tried to add rap. It really did feel like old people trying to figure out rap and be like, this is what this is, right?
It yeah, for sure.
But you know what? They tried. It's okay. I think someone's review said the Casio beat. And I was like, that's so dated. Why? That hurt my feelings. That really hurt my feelings. Especially like, quit hurting my feelings about this movie. I love it so much. I watched this one, I think, way more than I did the first one. It's just something to that soulfulness to it, and it just felt so beautiful. My sister used to direct our little church choir, and she mm-hmm. would take influences from there. Maybe that's why I loved it as much as I did, because she loved these movies. But she mm-hmm. would try to do things from here. She would do that, and then Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? We had different renditions from that, too.
Very interesting.
That's right. We were cool.
Oh, my. Cool. Well, these were certainly fun. Fun for me to watch. I'm glad you got to watch them again.
You're welcome.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. They are available for streaming, listeners, if you want to check them out. And yeah, in the meantime, if you have any suggestions for what movies we should talk about next, you can send them to us. Our email is stephanie@momstuff.iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok @StuffOhNeverToldYou. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina.
Thank you, Christina. I have a feeling she's never seen these movies. Have you ever seen these movies?
Yes, Christina, we must know. And thanks to you for listening. Steph On Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.